upset that I'm not talking for an hour each time. You guys cool with that? I don't know. All right, so what we've been talking about, the overall theme for what we're doing is being children of Abraham, which means that, again, we have been blessed by God to be a blessing. And we just talked about how one of the mistakes the Israelites made was fearing everybody else around them and fitting into the culture around them, which is the same mistake that we can make. Another mistake that we can make is idolatry. Can you imagine being an Israelite? You've entered the land of Canaan, and your neighbors are Philistines. And what do you see in their city when you look at their city? Idols. You see temples for Dagon. You see temples for all these other gods, and you see people going to the temple every day, and they're leaving, and they look like they've been enlightened and happy because they just worshipped Dagon and everything like that. That's the culture that you live in. And all of these people are worshipping something other than the Lord, and the Israelites got involved in the same thing. And it hindered them from being able to be a blessing to the world. Because, consider this, in order to be a blessing to the world, the Israelites needed to teach people about the Lord. But what if they were starting to worship idols? Would they be able to know how to communicate information about the Lord to people like that? Would they be able to experientially know what the Lord has done in their life to be able to pass that information on to other people? No. When we have idols in our hearts, we are unable to speak about the Lord. We can't do it. We can't do it genuinely anyways. So what we're going to talk about is idolatry in this lesson and remove one of the other things that we can sometimes do that hinders us from being a blessing to the world. And by the way, the next two sessions today are going to start talking about how we can practically be a blessing to the world. So we're removing hindrances, and then the rest of today we're going to talk about practical ways that we can do that. So let's turn to Romans chapter 1. We're going to be reading Romans chapter 1. And by the way, whenever you think about idolatry, what comes to your mind first of all? Think of idols, like little statues, right? Like kind of what we just talked about. Idolatry existed in that form thousands of years ago, but we have to understand at the beginning of this lesson that idolatry still exists today, even though we have reached this age of enlightenment and we don't have idol statues anymore, we still have our idols, and they're well and alive today. So let's go ahead and look at Romans chapter 1, and we're going to read verses 18 through 25. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their heart to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So in this text, Paul is describing the downfall of a nation. When God created the world in Genesis, and you have all these nations that started to spread out after the Tower of Babel, you have these nations that over time started to fall away from the Lord, and they didn't know Him anymore. And Paul is describing the process that it takes for a nation to no longer know the Lord and get involved in idolatry. Now, from this text, did any of you see a good way that we could define idolatry? If you scan through the text, tell me what you guys think would be a good definition of idolatry by using the words of the text. Yeah, it's making an exchange. In verse 25, you have exchanging the truth about God for a lie. Look over at verse 23. Exchanging the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man. At its root, Idolatry means that I'm making an exchange. I'm exchanging my appreciation and worship of God for something that has been created by God. And God is the one that deserves all of that, but God ends up not getting it from us when we get involved in idolatry. In short, idolatry is worshiping anything other than God. That's what it is. How seriously does God take this? Like, in the Old Testament, in Jeremiah chapter 3, I'm just going to go ahead and read this, you don't have to turn there, but Jeremiah 3:6 says, "Have you seen what she did, that faithless one Israel? How she went up on every high hill and under every green tree and there played the whore." It's ESV translation. God views idolatry as a wife cheating on a husband. That's pretty serious. So in our culture, a lot of the times what we say about idolatry is, oh, that's that person's hobby, and that's that person's passion, and that's what they spend all of their time, money, energy, effort on, and that's what they worship and serve, and that's their thing, and that's okay. How does God think about that? It's like a husband cheating on a wife. It's like a wife cheating on her husband. That's serious stuff. So when we see that at the beginning of this text, we understand that worshiping anything else, that's how God thinks about it. Now, how does idolatry begin in this text? It begins, like we said earlier, about making this exchange. In verse 25, it begins when we exchange the truth of God for a lie. Whether it was idolatry in the Old Testament or it's idolatry today, idolatry always begins, it always begins by exchanging the truth about God for a lie. And sometimes that can be different truths about God, and you tweak God, and you still call it God, but it's not God. For example, in our culture right now, there's a lot of people that are saying that God won't send anybody to hell. God's loving, and there's not an eternal place where people will be condemned in hell. God's not like that. They still call it God, but that's not God. That's an idol. Even though it's close, or it seems close to the God of the Bible because they use the Bible and they preach from the Bible, that's still an idol. So it's kind of a subtle idol. But that's one way that that can happen. But there's a specific truth in this text that's being exchanged. What is the specific truth in this text that's being exchanged in verse 20? It talks about God's eternal power and divine nature. And in verse 19, God's ability to have created everything and His creation has been plain to everybody because they've been able to see it since the creation of the world. So the specific truth that's being exchanged in this text is that God is the all-powerful creator. God didn't create it all. It's just kind of always been here. Evolution, all this kind of stuff. We have that same kind of exchange happening in our culture today. Whenever Genesis 1 is discussed, do you know what oftentimes comes to the forefront of the discussion? Like, Genesis 1, 6 days of creation, what do we typically talk about? Whether or not the days were literal, right? I personally think the days were literal. But do you know what the point of Genesis 1 was for the original context or the original audience? The Israelites had been in Egypt worshiping false gods. That's what they saw. Where were they going? The promised land, which was filled with what? Idols. False god worship. That kind of thing. Moses writes Genesis 1 to the wandering Israelites getting ready to go to the promised land. What would Genesis 1 mean for them? What would it mean? Don't worship anything else. God spoke it into existence. God said, "Let there be light," and there is light. God spoke everything else into existence, and the lesson for the Israelites was this. You're going to be entering this promised land where people worship all kinds of other things. You don't worship them because God's the creator. That's the specific truth that's being exchanged in this text. And when we talk about idolatry, it's good to start where the Bible starts with this, and it's good to start where Paul starts with this in Romans 1. The major truth that's exchanged is that God is not the all-powerful creator. Now, is it possible for me to recognize that God is the creator, but still be exchanging that truth? Like, in verse 18, these people suppress the truth in their unrighteousness. It's possible for me to recognize that God's the all-powerful creator and sing the hymn that, you know, God created everything, whatever hymn that I was trying to think of a hymn, but I just lost it. I'm sorry about that. I look like a fool now. So, like, we can sing hymns that talk about God creating everything and recognize that He did that, but we can suppress that. What does it mean to try to suppress something? Like it's trying to come up, but you're trying to like hold it down. I can intellectually know that God created the world and God's the all-powerful creator, but I can suppress that and not honor Him and worship Him like I'm supposed to and let that truth transform the way that I am. So how can we tell in our life what it is that we worship? In this text, it tells us two things that we can know. The idea of worship, let's start out with this. Have you guys ever, if you guys were to describe what the word worship means, how would you define that?
Praising something that you think is in a higher standard.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think about that. Have you ever noticed the similarity between the word worship and worthiness? Worship, worthiness. Whatever we think is worthy of being esteemed and glorified and praised, like you said, are the same things that we worship. So to worship something means that you really look up to it and you want to become like it and you want to sacrifice to it and you that it just means everything to you. So in our lives, what is it that we worship? And how can we tell what we worship? A big indicator is what we love to talk about. Like Jesus talked about how whatever comes out of our mouth proceeds from the heart. And so what we love to talk about and what we really get enthusiastic about can be an indicator of what our God is. There's been times before where I've seen Christians who you bring up the Bible and suddenly they don't want to talk about it. But if you talk about NASCAR racing, man, that's cool. I really like NASCAR racing, or I really like this, that, or the other thing. But when we bring up the Bible, no, don't do that. Did you know that we're all evangelists? Every one of us is an evangelist. The word evangelist means someone who brings good news. What's your good news that you share with people? Is it your beauty, your intelligence, NASCAR racing, NFL, working out? What is your good news? And it's not wrong to have hobbies. I'm not saying it's wrong to have hobbies. But what are the things that really gets us excited? And whatever that is the same thing that we think is worthy of being esteemed and glorified and honored. And that's what we worship. But in this text, it doesn't just talk about worshiping something, it also talks about serving something. In verse 25, it talks about how after you make this exchange, you worship and serve the creature. So what is it that we serve? Like, what is it that controls your schedule throughout the day? What is it that you are enslaved to and you can't stop doing that thing? What is it that determines your decision-making? What is it that determines the way that you live your life? That's what you... And that's what I serve. And if it's not the Lord, then that means that I'm committing idolatry. And that's what this text is all about. Any comments or questions up to this point that you guys want to make? All right, so what we have to do in this with this lesson is talk about the nature of idolatry. Because a lot of the times we can think, well, God's a killjoy, right? Because I really like NASCAR racing, and God says that that can't be my God. I can have hobbies, that's okay, I understand that. But that can't be my God, and so God's trying to take away my joy. You guys ever felt that way before? Where you have something that really means a lot to you, and you know that God does not want that thing to be in your life, or be as important as it is, and you go, oh man, I know what I'm supposed to do, and God just doesn't want me to have fun in life. I've been there before. Look at Proverbs chapter 25. Proverbs chapter 25 shows us the nature of idolatry and what happens when we worship idols. Look at Proverbs 25, verse 16. It says, if you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it out. That's the verse. If you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it out. What's that proverb teaching?
Control.
Is honey inherently wrong? I like honey. Honey is pretty sweet. I like to drink tea. And I'm trying to drink more tea than coffee, but sometimes I get into coffee ruts and I just can't help it because I'm violating this passage, I guess. So honey is a really good thing, but too much of it will hurt you. Do you know that a lot of the times idols are good things? That is, I've heard idolatry described this way. That idolatry is when you take a good thing and you make it a God thing and then it becomes a bad thing. It's when you take a good thing, like maybe your career or maybe education or something like that, but then it becomes the ultimate thing in your life, the thing that's going to find you, give you meaning, fulfillment, security, comfort, everything. And you make that be the priority in your life. And this text shows us that when we take a good thing and we make it a God thing, we end up vomiting it out. And this text shows us that too much of a good thing can hurt us. I've heard idolatry described before as misordered love. Is it good for me to love my wife Samantha? Yep, but what if I put her above God? Is that bad? That's bad then. God created Adam in Genesis 2 to work in the garden. Is work a good thing? But what if I make work the ultimate thing in my life? Then that becomes a bad thing. So that's what a lot of idolatry is. Sometimes idolatry is something that's explicitly wrong, like pornography or stealing if you're a kleptomaniac. But a lot of the times our idols become things that are not inherently wrong, that have just become way too important to us. Any comments or questions that you guys want to make up to this point about this as we're talking about it? Okay, so what I want to do is talk about for the rest of this lesson how if we have an idol in our life, it ends up not satisfying us the way that we want it to. Did you guys ever do guppy units in elementary school? Like guppies are little fish. Maybe this is a Minnesota thing because people in Brentwood didn't know it either. Okay, when I was in elementary school in Minnesota, we had guppies, these little fish. And we had a unit where we got to like keep them in this little kid pool at school, and we got to feed them and take care of them, and then eventually after the unit was over, we got to keep the guppies and bring them home. What they told us about the guppies was this: don't overfeed them because they will eat too much and explode, because that's how stupid they are. Sometimes that's how we are with idols. We have found something that we think is good and tasty and satisfies some of our desires, but we get too much of it and then we just explode and we're no longer right with God because of that. Because our idols end up harming us. In Isaiah chapter 7, you have the Israelites who are, the southern kingdom is being teamed up against by the northern kingdom and the Syrians. And you have the king, do you remember the king's name? What? Ahaz. Yeah, you got it. Thank you. You got Ahaz, and he wants to go ahead and trust in the Assyrians for deliverance. As you go through the book of Isaiah, do you know who ends up destroying or conquering a lot of the southern kingdom? It's the Assyrians. Because whatever you end up trusting in, if it's not God, it's going to hurt you. And here's some examples of how this works. Dating relationships. Is it good to have a relationship with somebody? Yeah, that's nice. But what if it becomes the ultimate thing? What if I need to find all of my fulfillment and purpose in life by having somebody love me? It's not going to work because that person's going to fail me. When I was in college, there was a girl that I knew that broke up with her boyfriend because he smoked pot. And he kept doing it over and over and over again. She broke up with him, and then she waited a few months when nobody else would date her, and then she decided to go back to him. And when they started dating again, guess what he started doing? Pot again. Her heart was broken. Like, she just felt like her meaning in life had been destroyed and sucked out of her because her God let her down. And I remember talking to her at school and she said, "What am I supposed to do? I can't believe he got back into pot." What would you guys tell somebody like that? Turn to God. If you make God your God, are you ever going to be let down? You might not have all the physical things. You might not get your Maserati and you might not have a mansion, but that's okay. Because you're going to have a rock in your life that won't let you down. Sometimes we can use relationships this way, where we need to have meaning and fulfillment in life based on somebody loving me. Who should that somebody be? It should be the Lord. It should be Jesus. And if I put my meaning and my fulfillment in Him, am I going to have this kind of brokenheartedness that this girl had? No. By the way, why do we get broken hearts? It's because we attach them to things that can pull away from us. That's why we get a broken heart. We put all of our eggs in this basket, and this basket is not God. It pulls away, it lets us down, and so we have a broken heart, and life isn't the way that I want it to be. Can you guys think of any other idols that let us down? What was that?
Money.
The recession, economic recession, 2008. Did you guys know that when the recession happened, a lot of people who were rich and lost money committed suicide? And you guys hear in the news a lot of the times about celebrities who have a lot of money, and you hear about stories of them getting involved in drugs, committing suicide, domestic problems. If money was the answer in life, wouldn't they be okay? Because they got a lot of it. That's not the answer in life. By the way, I said we talk about Molech worship. We remember when we talked about Molech worship with the children that were burned on the arms of the statue? Does anybody know why people would worship Molech? Okay, the reason that people would worship Molech was for financial security. Because Molech said this, not really, because he's not a real god, but this is what Molech said, that if you worship me and you sacrifice one of your children, the rest of your family is going to be taken care of financially. Does Molech worship still happen today? Fathers who work 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, sacrificing their children to the rest of the world to be raised by the rest of the world so that they can be financially secure. Molech worship still happens today. And it doesn't work out very well. Money is an idol. What other idols are there?
Ourselves.
And by the way, when we think about all of these idols, do you know what happens? We try to figure out the thing in our life that is going to satisfy me and I like. So idol worship really comes down to worshiping myself. If I'm going to be worshiping sports, it's because I'm athletic and I like sports. You guys ever heard of Tiki Barber? Any of the NFL fans like Tiki Barber? He was in the NFL from 1997 to 2006. Do you remember what happened after he retired? Do you remember? You're nodding your head. Okay, so he retires in 2006, and he's retired for a few years, and he wants to get back into the game. And he was depressed and brokenhearted that he wasn't playing the game anymore, so he tries to start, you know, trying out for teams again. Nobody wants him. And when all of that was happening, he said, "I need the game." What if you make sports your god, and you get in a car accident, and you can't play it anymore? What happens then? What if you make sports your god and you get to an age like Tiki Barber and you can't play it anymore? Looks like your god let you down. If you make that your god, it's going to let you down. I made the Philadelphia Eagles my god when I was in junior high. And in 2006, they lost to the Cheatriots because they cheated. I'm just kidding, they probably didn't. But that god let me down. And it didn't pan out the way that I wanted it to. Can you guys think of any other gods that end up not fulfilling us like we want it to? Our friends, relationships. If Samantha, my wife, if she made me her god, how satisfied would her life be? You guys can be honest. It would be pretty bad. Because if she's finding all of her fulfillment in me, I'm going to let her down. I'm going to say stupid things. I'm going to hurt her feelings from time to time. I'm going to be harsh with her sometimes. I'm not going to treat her the way that God wants me to all the time, but I strive to. And so she's going to be let down every time I mistreat her. What other gods do we have in our culture? Yeah.
Let's say government.
Yes. Government's a big one. We rely on them for certain things. If they're not going the way that we want it to go, then suddenly everything's going to go horrible, but if we have the right president, everything's going to be fine. No, 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 we can't rely on that either. Very good. What else? Family? Fame. Yeah, that's another good one. We were talking about this last night with some of the folks. Would you really like to be a famous person? I mean, everywhere you go, people are like, "Oh, Tim McGraw! Oh, whatever, whoever you are." And people just flock to you, and you can't ever be peaceful by yourself because people just are flocking to you all the time. I wouldn't like that. What else? Any other gods that you guys can think of? What about beauty? Being beautiful. Here's a statistic. In 2015, it's projected that Americans will spend $17.6 billion on plastic surgery. And in our country right now, over 72 million people, or one-third of Americans, have a membership to a gym. And I have a membership to a gym. Obviously, I don't go to it, but I have one. And I don't think it's wrong to have one, and I don't think it's wrong to go to a gym, and I don't think it's wrong to get plastic surgery, but these are just indicators of one thing that our culture worships. In the first century, you'd see temples where people would go and worship. One of our temples today is the gym, because people worship their body and being strong and being beautiful and all this kind of thing. And what ends up happening to you when you get older? Okay. I heard another comment too. What was it? You look like him. I mean, really, if God's going to be your beauty, you get older and you get wrinkly and you get gray hair and you get all these other kinds of things, and your God beauty really didn't end up the way that you wanted it to. And so if you worship that, it's going to break your heart and let you down. What about education? Go. Knowledge. Okay, education. If you guys would have seen the flyers for this youth lectureship and it said Dr. Eric Borlaug, would you have been more excited about that? Dr. Eric Borlaug here for the youth forum. Our culture values education. Is education a bad thing? No. But if it becomes your pursuit in life and that's all that matters to you and you spend all of your time on homework and you never read the Bible and never pray to God, what's your God? Education. That can't be a God. And by the way, what happens if I make that my God? And I try to find all my meaning and fulfillment in that. I'm always going to find somebody smarter than me, which will be depressing. School systems are always changing their textbooks and everything, so I'm going to be behind pretty quickly. And so I guess education isn't going to be very good to me either. Can you guys think of any other gods? Yeah.
Cell phones.
Cell phones, yeah. Social media and cell phones, things like that, very good. So like items, like physical items can sometimes be gods. What else?
Trends,
yeah. Trends. Like, oh, I want to fit in with my certain kind of shoes and shorts and car and all this kind of stuff. And when that happens, the trends change. And I guess that God was only momentary and it wasn't very good. What about this God, the praise of men? You guys, this is a spiritually minded group. Like, yesterday, talking to some of you guys, I'm really encouraged by you guys. But do you know what can sometimes be a subtle God in groups that are really spiritually focused? And I'm not saying that any of you are struggling with this. But sometimes a struggle with people that are more in an energetic, spiritually minded church, sometimes a struggle can be the praise of men. Because you're in an environment where people are really fostering, growing in the Lord and doing the right thing and serving God. And sometimes a subtle motivation for that can be, I want to be praised by people. And we've got to be careful for that. And what happens when the praise of men stops coming? And that's been my God. My God let me down. Do you know why Jesus was crucified? Look at Mark chapter 15. And before we read this, did any of you guys watch the Bible series on TV that was on the History Channel? My wife and I bought that, and I actually thought there were some good things in it. I thought there were some bad things. But there's one scene that I really liked. And there's this rabbi that was like teaching a group of people like in a little section like this. And like they were all listening to him. And then here comes Jesus around the corner, and they see Jesus, and do you know what they do? Oh, there's Jesus. Let's all go over to Jesus. And then it leaves the rabbi right here, and he's like, Jesus took all the praise of men, and they walked over that way. You know what happens with the praise of men? Sometimes it stops coming. And if that's what I'm relying on and that's what I'm fueling my life on, it's going to stop coming. And I'm going to get envious then. And look at Mark 15, verse 10. For he perceived, for he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. Jesus was delivered up because of envy. Because they stopped receiving the praise of men. And in religious circles and in churches, when praise stops coming and envy gets in the way, it ruins people and it divides churches. We've got to be careful of that. That our commendation comes from the Lord and not from what people say about us or to us. Any comments or questions about any other gods that will let us down? Yeah.
Yeah, meaning of the Psalms and the fact that you're singing to God.
Yeah, very good. Good. Any other comments or questions? I really want us to see this Proverbs 25:16 that we started with. That's a good verse to write down and have highlighted in your Bible. You can find honey and you can have some of it, and a little amount of a good thing is a good thing, but don't make it the ultimate thing in your life. And it will let you down just like the guppies. The guppies will kill themselves based on all the food that they eat. Now, I want to end with Isaiah 55. Look at Isaiah 55. Look at verses 1 and 2. It says, "Come everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and he who has no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk, without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food." Imagine this. Like, the picture that you get when you read this passage is that Isaiah is in the marketplace, and beside him are people that are selling like pomegranates, and then other people that are selling clothes that they're making, and then you have Isaiah saying, "Come, come to me," and what kind of people is he inviting? Yeah. I'm going to give you something, and it's not going to cost you anything. You want to get into a business and have that business model? Not going to work very well. But what kind of people, like, what are these people struggling with? What's their problem? They're thirsty. They're thirsty, and they're hungry. Why are they thirsty and why are they hungry? What was that? They have no purpose in life because they've been worshiping idols. Isaiah's writing in the context of the Israelites who are about to be exiled from their homeland. And why were they exiled? Molech worship. Worshipping Baal. Worshipping all these false gods. And before they get exiled, Isaiah is saying, "Come and take the good food, the things that will satisfy you. And you don't have to pay any money for it. But I'm going to offer it to you." For my birthday recently, Samantha and I went to a really fancy restaurant in Nashville. And it was like $92 for both of us, but it was really good. Yeah, I know. So, that was really rich, good food. I can't afford to go to Stony River every day. But there is a rich food that I can have every single day. And that's the Lord. That's what he says in verse 2. When he says, "Come buy wine," wine is like a luxury. "Come buy milk," that's emphasizing sustenance, and you don't have to pay for it. God will give it to you. So for anybody here this morning, are you thirsty? Have you been trying to spend all of your money and all of your efforts on that which is not food? And by the way, does that represent a lot of people in our culture? Spending money, spending time, spending energy and effort on all of these things that don't satisfy. And all along, you have Isaiah in his booth saying, "Come to me. I will give you the food that really satisfies." Think about that in your life. Are you brokenhearted? Are you needing to be fixed up before you can start being a blessing to the world like we've been talking about? We need to cast our idols out and make sure that those get out of our life. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of that? Yeah. Yeah.
What you said about idols is that they will eventually go away and that will leave us like separated. But when we hold to God and change Him, we will not be separated. And the only way that it, because our heart is, if our heart is attached to money and we somehow lose our job or something and the money goes away, that means our heart is broken. But if we hold our hearts to God, that means we won't be broken.
Right.
The only way it will.
Right. Reminds me of the story in Judges 17 and 18 when you have Micah the priest, and he had made these idols and he made this worship shrine, but you have the Danites that come and they steal the gods, and Micah and his priest and everything go out and they run after the people and they say, "You stole our gods." If your God can be stolen from you, You better not worship it. Because it will be stolen or will be taken away from you one day. And your heart will be torn. But if we make God our refuge and really, really daily living with the way that we live our daily life, really make Him our refuge and our everything, we will enter into a kind of joy that nothing else could ever give us. Doesn't mean that we're going to have all the nice cars and the nice mansions like we said earlier. But we will have the satisfaction of knowing the God who created us and being able to know that we'll be with Him one day. Any other comments or questions? No. All right, thanks for your guys' good attention.